Welcome to the Sales Readiness Podcast, a podcast brought to you by the Sales Readiness Group, an industry-leading sales training company that helps businesses develop highly effective sales organizations. For more information, visit us at salesreadinessgroup.com. This audio track features a webinar recording on managing the sales pipeline for better results with two of the principals at the Sales Readiness Group, Norman Bihar and Ray Makla. In this audio track, we share best practices to help your sales team better manage opportunities and eliminate bloat from the sales pipeline to improve the accuracy of your sales forecasts. Enjoy.
You know, some of the reasons that you really want to manage your sales pipeline effectively, which would be more accurate forecasts and some of the forecasting challenges you might face. We're going to introduce a methodology or a process to create more accurate forecasts, how to conduct an effective pipeline review, which is really a great skill, and then some coaching around how to help work with your salespeople individually to manage and advance opportunities. So the content for today is content not only from our training program, but also a book we released this year, earlier this year, getting really great reviews. It's called The High Impact Sales Manager, and this content is specifically related to managing a sales team, and within that, managing the sales pipeline. So, Ray, I'm going to turn it over to you maybe to provide a little bit of definition, and maybe we'll get a little bit of audience participation as well.
Yeah, thanks, Norman, and I'm also thrilled to be here. I think this is a really interesting topic to talk about and walk through the process here, and one that we get a lot of interest, and I was just going to link back to that on the high-impact sales manager. You know, this particular topic, when we look at what a frontline sales manager does, you know, we often look at management as how do we get the most out of our people? How do we manage performance? And if there's a gap in performance, you know, what actions can we take? And I think that's often the focus for those frontline managers, because those are really fundamental skills and very important. But the other piece, and we've heard this over the years loud and clear, the other piece that I think managers really struggle with is that idea of improving their ability to manage the pipeline and have clean and accurate forecasts. So I think that's really where we're getting to with this definition. And what we're going to introduce is a process, and it's really a structured process to analyze the pipeline and at the same time hopefully improve win rates and improve the accuracy of the forecast. And we'll talk about, you know, I think why that's so important and some of the things that we can do to improve that. So as we go through, and we'd really like to get some input from the group here before we kind of get into the topic. And one of the ways we do that is we use a poll. And so I'd like to set this up. And, you know, I think those of us who have managed a pipeline or maybe we've managed managers have probably felt some of these challenges in the past. And what we'd love to do is we'll bring this poll up and just have you comment or select two of these options. So what are the top challenges that you find with managing the pipeline? And, you know, is that the stalled opportunities? Is that there's not enough new opportunities in the pipeline? Stages maybe aren't clearly defined, or there's inconsistency on how the reps can categorize those opportunities. You know, and ultimately, you know, maybe the challenge is it's just a non-accurate or inaccurate forecast. So again, you can actually select two of the options here, and we just like to get a cross-section. I think this will give us a good breakout of where the group is. And Norman, I mean, I know you've managed large sales teams and been in and around sales most of your career. Do some of these resonate particularly with you in terms of some of the challenges you've run into in the past?
Absolutely. I think, you know, these are all topics we're going to cover, and I'll show the results as we comment on that. I think we're getting a lot of participation here. But, you know, if we look at, and I'll also end the poll, so that it's not moving around. But, you know, we look at this, and you know, it's very consistent with, you know, my own experience. You see a lot of stalled opportunities, and I'll comment a little bit more about that. We're getting a tremendous amount of inquiries from clients. I'm just thinking about a publicly traded company we're doing a lot of work with right now, where the whole emphasis is on how do we get more new opportunities. I also released a blog post on this topic last week, maybe not entirely coincidental with the World Series, and it was about getting more quality at-bats, which is really about getting more new opportunities, whether those opportunities are with existing customers or with customers we've never done business with. pipeline stages can be fuzzy. We're going to talk a little bit about how to put some definition around those. Reps defining things differently really gets to the comment before that on the stages not being accurately defined. And the net result of that is that if they're not, and you start having some of the issues, the challenges identified, you're going to end up with inaccurate sales forecasts. So appreciate all the participation that we're getting, and very consistent with my own background. And Ray, I'm going to date myself a little bit here and talk a little bit about pre-CRM and post-CRM and kind of the good and the more challenging associated with managing a pipeline in a CRM system. So I really grew up in sales, you know, from starting my career as a sales professional and then moving into management and over time executive management. And if I go back maybe 15, 20 years ago, the opportunities were tracked by individual managers, often on a whiteboard. They might have a sales funnel drawn up on their whiteboard. Maybe every sales rep was a different color. They would list the opportunities. They would then review the opportunities with their sales reps every week and say which one of these are active. They would then kind of take away those that are not moving or do not meet the pipeline criteria. And so there weren't as many opportunities to manage. If there were a lot of opportunities, you know, we used a lot of Excel spreadsheets at the time, but there was a great rhythm to pipeline management. And then CRM systems, you know, going with some of the earliest CRM systems started to come out today, probably the most popular being Salesforce and then, you know, Microsoft Dynamics, but even other CRMs like Sugar. And these CRM systems are very, very powerful, and they create huge visibility. You can enter every single opportunity in there. You can start running all sorts of reports. There's all sorts of dashboards. And so you have all this great advantage of having a place where opportunities can be entered. There are stages that can be defined. And it is really better in most respects than the pre-CRM world. The one flaw that I see, and that we're really trying to address, one of the flaws we're trying to address in this webinar, is that you can end up with bloated pipelines. Because it is so easy to enter opportunities, those opportunities end up staying in the CRM system, and there really isn't an ongoing review and cleansing of all the opportunities. So you end up with something that we call a bloated pipeline, and I think that was one of the top challenges that was just identified by our audience, is you have this bloated pipeline that has all sorts of stalled or dormant opportunities. And when you get this bloated pipeline, it merely means things that have been in there for a long period of time but aren't necessarily advancing. And so that can lead, Ray, to inaccurate sales forecasts. It obviously reduces your credibility as a manager if you submit an inaccurate forecast. Sales reps and managers work on unqualified opportunities and not enough time on the right opportunities. And then it ties to the other issue, Ray, that you know, just came up, which is there isn't really enough emphasis on entering new opportunities, and maybe reps even leave the old opportunities in there just so they have enough to kind of show for what they've been working on, as opposed to removing those or recategorizing those and really putting an emphasis on new business development.
Yeah, absolutely. And Norman, if I could just comment on that, you know, I think the bloated pipeline, which leads to that inaccurate forecast, which was one of the top challenges there, you know, I think there's a real business impact to that as well. I mean, beyond just the impact on the sales team. And, you know, I think if we look at, you know, nothing really happens until the sale is made, as people have been quoted in the past, you know, that drives the resource allocation, that often drives the inventory management. It also drives the production capabilities or production forecasting. And, you know, frankly, it also has a real impact on kind of investor confidence and the way the market is looking at that company. So, you know, really it all boils back to, can we accurately and appropriately predict what's coming down the line and what's going to close? And I think when we look at it that way, it has a much bigger business impact maybe than we typically give it credit for. And I share, you know, it goes both ways, that sometimes we have this bloated pipeline where there's a lot of things in there that realistically aren't going to close. But we've also run into a number of clients who frankly, closed business that doesn't appear in the pipeline. And there's this unfortunate trend of, you know, people kind of keeping stuff in the top drawer or the desk drawer until the end of the month because they don't want the scrutiny or they don't want to expose it until they're sure about it. And so figuratively speaking, they're kind of hiding that stuff away. We had a client who had over $1 million a month that was closing that they had no visibility into. And again, that can just have a huge impact on the business. So I think the fundamental challenge there is how can we clean that up? How can we make it more accurate? You know, what can we do to be more successful in that endeavor?
Absolutely. And, you know, Ray, you and I have spent a lot of time talking about, you know, and developing this three-step process for better results. So maybe just at a high level, and I know we'll go through it in more detail, but just kind of take us through the process in terms of the three major aspects related to better pipeline management.
Yeah, so, you know, we have this idea, and it really starts with the objective criteria. You know, what are we using to define those stages, and what's the inputs and outputs and the real actionable steps along the way? So we're going to dive into that in a little bit more detail. And, you know, I would say most of our clients have some stages or some type of a pipeline defined in Salesforce or their CRM system. And, in fact, most have some, you know, out-of-the-box default for the industry of choice. The problem is when we really look at what the criteria is that they're using to advance those opportunities, as we're going to get to. And I will share, you know, oftentimes when we ask to see those pipeline stages, we end up with a very, very detailed, table that often has, you know, 10, 15, 20 different actions or steps at different stages. And, you know, I'm often asking the question, well, then how would we really know and which of these are more important and how do we really decide? So that's really where we're going to get to. But, you know, I think we'd like to actually get a little bit more audience participation here and talk about the pipeline criteria. So we're going to actually open up a chat pod here, and what we'd like to do is ask the question, you know, how do your salespeople determine when to advance an opportunity to the next stage? And that may seem like a pretty fundamental or basic question, but I think it's actually pretty profound. What are they really using to determine that that opportunity is ready to go to the next stage? And, you know, I'd love to hear some of the comments here as they pop up, and Norman, I think we can just read through these as they're coming up.
Well, completely subjective, you know, after they see a client, subjective, you know, so I think that's getting to really to, you know, one of the major reasons that, you know, pipelines can get bloated and that, you know, forecasting is so difficult is because people are using subjective criteria.
Yeah, you know, I think we may have those defined, but then when we, you know, kind of peel it back a little bit and ask the client, okay, so which of these are really important or how are you managing it, we find that, boy, there are really different definitions. And, you know, I think Tiffany makes the comment there may be lack of structured stages. Tom says it's unclear about the stages, and they do not know what next stage is to be. You know, so I think we're kind of finding some of these common symptoms. And I think we've all lived through this. You know, anybody who's been a sales manager and managed a sales team has probably struggled with some of these challenges in the past.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, these last two from Christy and Damian are very relevant, you know, in terms of, you know, we've established we have a product of value. That actually is a really good criteria for an early stage in the pipeline or indication of interest. What I like about those, and I know we'll talk more about, Ray, is that it's showing that the client has taken some action. And I know we're going to talk about client-driven actions. So I appreciate the participation. I'm going to close down the chat pod. And we'll just go dive a little bit deeper here into healthy pipeline stages.
Yeah, so let me speak to that a little bit. You know, I think when we look at how can we improve the quality of our pipeline and our forecasting, it really starts with that idea of healthy stages. And I'd say that's the foundation for everything we're talking about today. And really it gives us that opportunity to identify and track those opportunities through a clear process. So some of the comments were, well, there isn't a structured process in place, or if there is, there isn't clear objective criteria. And so I think that's the first step is really to understand what those stages. And frankly, I'm a fan of fewer, cleaner stages than in some cases, you know, if we have 8 to 10 stages, boy, it's really subtle sometimes to define how you get from one stage to the next or even what it means to be there. So, You know, I think having a clear sales process with those stages defined, and then we would suggest it needs to mirror how the customers make their purchase decisions. So have we really spent time understanding and thinking about that persona of the buyer and the process they go through when they make a purchase for the type of service or product that we're making? Do we know, you know, when they start their initial focus or research, when they start to identify their priorities and really find out what's important to them, and then, you know, they're gaining more knowledge about that solution before they start to develop their evaluation criteria, you know, and ultimately make their decision. Well, where are they in that process, and what do those stages look like for your particular client? I think our sales process should really mirror, and we should help our customer track through that process. But unless we've had some discussions and really understand what that is, again, I think it's really focused more on us sometimes about trying to get to a point where we can lob a proposal over to them and hope that it sticks. So that's really the final piece, which is, you know, what are the customer actions at each stage that we're expecting our customers to take that gives us evidence that the opportunity is moving forward? And this is probably the most significant point about this presentation, and we'll build on this as we go forward. But what are we expecting the customer to do, and do we have evidence of that as they move forward? So I think that's a key piece to that foundation and having a healthy pipeline. Norman, let's look at the next slide here, and it gives just a sample of some of those pipeline stages.
Sounds great. I'll bring that up in a moment. I just want to expand on your comment on mirrors how your customers make purchase decisions. And, you know, Ray, it's something that we really emphasize in our selling skills program, which is a model we call the process alignment model. And that process alignment model really helps salespeople think not only about their sales process. So we advise a lot of clients on, you know, sales process and stages associated with the sales process. But the key point that they're often missing or not cognizant of is it's not about just the sales process, it's the customer's purchase process. So using the right skills at the right time and really thinking about the customer actions that you're mentioning is critical, so that there's this advancement of an opportunity that's driven by customer action. So I think that if many of you are managing sales teams and they're talking about sales process, that's great. But then I think asking them, you know, well, what's going on the customer side? What's their purchase process? And to your point, Ray, I think this next slide that you're going to speak to puts a lot of color around that.
Yeah, so again, this is just a sample, and it's very simplified for kind of discussion purposes. But actually, I think it's really important to kind of boil it down to some of its basic elements, because, you know, again, in a standard process, we might go from a qualification stage to needs identification or needs development, where we're really, you know, finding more about the business problem. We start to discuss our solution in a presentation, develop and present our solution in a presentation phase, move to proposal, and ultimately contracting or negotiation, hopefully to close the deal. And I think, you know, oftentimes those seller actions are pretty well identified, right? We know what we need to do to qualify that opportunity. Maybe we have a checklist or a calculator that we use. We have great questions, hopefully, to ask to identify and develop that need and understand the pain and the business problem. You know, and then we get in and we're great at producing those presentations, and we show up with our presentation that we can walk through. And hopefully we get a little bit of interest so that we can, you know, submit a proposal and hopefully close that deal. But I think if we look at the right-hand column and think about, okay, what's the evidence at each stage that the customer is aligned and is bought in and is moving forward with us, I think we can really use that to qualify or disqualify at each stage and really determine whether it's appropriate to move forward. So here's some examples of that. You know, the first, I think, is pretty tangible. Have they agreed to have a meeting, a conversation, where we can go through some of those qualification questions? You know, that's pretty tangible. I think if the needs identification, you know, do they not only recognize the problem and they're helping, we can identify those needs, have they acknowledged that? In other words, if we lay those priorities out, are they going to say, yep, you've got it, you understand my problem? Well, now I can feel like I've actually accomplished and satisfied that criteria because they've acknowledged that back verbally or by email. And then when I move to that presentation phase, sure, it's one thing to go through my proposal and show how great it is, but it's another for them to say, yep, that's great. I'd really like to see a proposal. And I'd like to add one more criteria to that, which is that they're going to agree to review that proposal. And so, you know, we all run into those situations where the customer says, sure, send me over a proposal. I'll take a look at it. But unless I can get that follow-up meeting booked with the decision makers, it might not be worth our time, or we may need to work harder to develop our sponsors and to get to the decision makers before it's really worth investing that time. And then we go through, submit our proposal. Hopefully we get a verbal or email response that, you know, we're a finalist or that we're moving forward. We can go into those negotiation phases. And obviously, you know, the output there we're looking for is that they've agreed to sign the contract or move forward to a contracting phase. So, again, I think we can look at each of those as what are the tangible outcomes that we're looking for that the customer is going to take. And it should be a give and take. We shouldn't do all the work as a salesperson. We should be requiring the customer to have some skin in the game and some involvement. I mean, it's their problem that we're trying to help them solve. So we'd really like to get their agreement and commitment along the way as well. Norman, what other thoughts do you have about that?
Yeah, I want to just expand on the proposal stage, because I think so many clients are, you know, when we talk to them, they say that their, you know, their sales team often, you know, at the customer's request is lobbing over proposals or may also be sending in RFP responses. And I think that your point is spot on, Ray. If there isn't a client action associated with that, for example, as opposed to just lobbing over a proposal, hey, I'd love to send you a proposal, but, you know, let's book a date where we can review that together. Or before we send the proposal, I'd like to put together a solutions presentation to make sure that actually aligns. So I think what happens is if we send the proposal, quite often the client goes, client, they have what they need, but we're not necessarily being able to advise them, understand interest. I also think another symptom there, Ray, is that the proposals are often sent to stakeholders that are influencers, not decision makers, and then we're relying on someone internally to make, to present or move the proposal forward for us, as opposed to doing the selling ourselves. So I think the presentation proposal stage are really critical, that we're not only that we're mapping the organization, we understand who the influencers are, who the decision makers are, and that we're getting the client to have some skin in the game in reviewing the proposal with us, as opposed to just lobbing that over for their consideration.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'd love to be in a situation where the proposal is just really confirming both what we heard and what we've already had in discussion. And so, you know, that should be more of a confirmation that we're moving forward, as opposed to we're going to send it over and hope that they circulate it and that they call us back if they're interested. So absolutely, I couldn't agree more.
So Ray, the second, you know, we've talked about objective criteria, and I think our participants really clued in on that as well when we had the chatbot open about, you know, assigning the objective criteria. Also, I think your point about making sure that's really customer action driven is critical. Another thing that we see with pipelines and comes up a lot is that the percentages associated with each stage are really not reasonable percentages. And the question is often raised, well, how do you know what's a reasonable percentage? And I think that once you have objective criteria, you can start looking back at historical win rates and saying, based on, you know, opportunities that were in this stage, what percentage of those went to closed one? And if you do that for each stage, you end up with a something that's a lot easier to factor, which is looking at each pipeline stage, assigning a reasonable but yet conservative probability, and then looking at the total amount of active business in each stage. For example, if you have 3 million in qualification stage, from a forecasting standpoint, you know, that's that the value on that is $300,000, whereas you could be as high as 90% as a potential close rate when you're down to the negotiating and agreement, and then factor that. So the math isn't that hard to follow in terms of just assigning reasonable probabilities based on historical win rates. But Ray, a question that often comes up is these probabilities may be realistic, but maybe the close date's not realistic. So what are your thoughts in terms of inspecting close dates prior to doing your factoring?
Yeah, and you know, we'll go through a checklist of some of the things I think you should be looking at, but I think the close date is critical, and often not accurate because salespeople are pretty optimistic. And I think more often than not, we find that the stage is not appropriate. In other words, as you mentioned, that percentage may be, roughly, and again, this is just for our forecasting purposes, but the percentage may be okay, but in fact, it really doesn't deserve to be at that stage. And we either need to work harder to complete that stage, or we need to actually move it up and kind of decrease the probability as a result and say, you know what, it's not ready to be at this stage because we haven't finished those actions and the customer hasn't taken the actions that we expect.
No, Ray, I didn't know you were going to take the content in that direction, but I think it's a really interesting point because the tendency is obviously to focus on moving things down towards closing, but you want to just expand on moving things back up and what that means?
Well, sure. And when we get into, what are the actions that we're taking and what did we expect the customer to do, and really, and again, not to steal some of the future content, but I think we have two questions at that point. Do we disqualify it and completely get it out of the pipeline if we haven't met those commitments and the customer hasn't met the commitments? Do we make it inactive for some period of time and see if we can revive it? Or do we move it back up in the pipeline and say, that's okay, but we really don't know what all the needs are and we haven't finished that. In other words, the customer hasn't confirmed that we've got their solution right and that we finished all of those qualification questions. So we're going to move that back up and you're welcome to work on that, Mr. Sales Rep or Ms. Sales Rep, but we're going to go through that process before we allow you to move it to that next stage.
So that's a great lead into the third area on tracking velocity. And, when we talk about dormant opportunities, velocity obviously is one of the big drivers.
Yeah, so this is a really interesting concept and one that I haven't seen as much, in the industry or seen other sales managers using. And that's the idea of how long should it take a typical opportunity to work its way through the pipeline. And I think now, and to your point earlier about the probabilities at each stage. I think now with some of the sales enablement tools that are coming out and some of the plugins that we can add to our CRM, we could start having much better visibility both to where opportunities are stalling and also how long it's taking at each stage to move forward. Because, when we ask the question of our clients, we often get the response, well, I don't know, it depends, and, we can't really predict that. Well, I guess I'd push back a little bit on that and say, well, for your average opportunity, those that are underneath that bell curve, you better have a handle on how long you think it should take and at least put a stake in the ground and say, well, we're going to predict, and, this is for a fairly short, probably three and a half month sales cycle, but you could obviously expand that regardless. What is the typical deal take at each stage? What do we expect to happen? And now we can actually look at that and see where the outliers are. And I think what's really important about this exercise is when we start seeing opportunities that have been in the same stage for 60, 90, 120 days, maybe longer, depending on your sales cycle, but compared to the others, we're saying, okay, what's really happening? Do we really have an action that we're taking? Was the customer supposed to do something and we're just waiting and hoping for them to do that? And if we haven't been able to get that commitment, again, maybe we need to deactivate that. Maybe we need to scrub it or move it back up and, kind of start the process over again.
So, Ray, I want to expand on that a little bit. So if you have this notion, let's say you have a six-month sales cycle, when you go to your typical default in your CRM system, it'll show the total amount of time that the opportunity has been in the pipeline, but the CRM systems also allow you to track days in stage. So I think your point about tracking days in stage may be as relevant or more relevant than total elapsed time. For example, if you have a six-month sales cycle, but something's been in the presentation stage for 120 days, that probably doesn't bode very well. The other thing that we advise our clients to do is to set up a stage called inactive. And the idea of having an inactive stage, so you think about, this qualification, needs identification, presentation, proposal negotiation. We have five stages here prior to closed won or closed lost. But there may be other opportunities that are neither closed won or lost, but simply are dormant. And if they sit in your pipeline, they're going to lead to a forecast that is too high because you're forecasting something that's been in stage too long. So our rule of thumb is if something's been in stage too long and there isn't a reasonable reason behind that, move it to a new stage called inactive, and then do a review of your active pipeline with the stages, you know, as example, you know, the ones on the screen, and then do a review of your inactive pipeline and say, what does it have to do to advance to the next stage? And by the way, when it advances to the next stage, it goes back to active. So again, the CRM systems are really powerful, and this idea of looking at days and stage to eliminate bloat from the pipeline, I think is really interesting and something that, you know, we do ourselves and we advise our clients to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it does allow us to quickly assess the viability and maybe take a look at a few of those opportunities that we can focus on and work on. You know, I just wanted to cover one other thing, Norman, before we move on. And we actually had a couple of great questions that I just wanted to address before we move to the next section. And, you know, specifically Randy asked about in a complex sales organization, the customer often doesn't know the process or how it works. And, you know, he talks about in acquisitions and large organizations, you know, sometimes it's really confusing what the approval process looks like. So how can they accurately know the buying process? And I guess, you know, I'd really put that back, and I think it's a great question because it's one that we, you know, I think all of us run into. But I think what it speaks to is if they can't articulate what that process looks like to get approval and to move forward, then we're likely not speaking at the right level or speaking to the right person. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just saying maybe that person can be a coach or a sponsor that can help get us to the right place. But if we're asking those kind of questions like, well, you know what, really before we invest and move forward with this proposal, we need to understand what that looks like. Can you help us get that information? You know, I think now we can shed some light on and help to qualify that a little bit further before we expend our hard effort on that opportunity that may not go anywhere. Because I will say, unless we know what that looks like, then we really are just kind of throwing it up in the wall against the wall and hoping that it sticks. So I'd work really hard to say, well, then, great, can you help us answer that question? And if they can't, you know, again, maybe we're not talking to the right person. The other question that we got from Dwight was just about probability. And does the probability vary based on the industry? And I would say not just on the industry, but based on your own product or solution and your own situation. So I would say with all of this, you know, your mileage may vary. And you should be looking at that for your particular sales team and your particular situation so that you have a good idea of what those probabilities and stages might look like.
You know, Ray, I think a lot of salespeople, particularly junior salespeople, to your first question, are hesitant to ask a key influencer some of those more difficult questions. And yet there's a lot of very non-threatening ways to ask those questions about how an opportunity is approved within a company. And, you know, a couple of techniques we could use would be talking to a key stakeholder and just saying, you know, within your organization, help us reverse engineer. If you were going to move forward with this, who else would be involved in the process? Another way to ask that is, have you guys engaged in similar initiatives in the past? And then when they provide a similar initiative, well, roughly how long did that take? Was that something, was it budgeted? Who else was involved in making that decision? So there are some pretty non-threatening ways that you can approach your key influencers or, as you said, coaches to really better understand who else would be involved and what the time frame for decision making is. To your point, Ray, we do have a second part to this presentation today, which I would say gets more to the art of pipeline management. Much of what we've talked about right now is what I would call kind of the science of pipeline management. But maybe just take us through a quick checklist and then we'll get to the opportunity coaching section, which I think is the part that really can increase win rates.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I think this really is that stake in the ground to look at improving the health of the overall pipeline. And we're going to talk about, yeah, closing those specific deals or moving those deals forward. But, you know, these are some of the things I'd want to look at quickly as a manager looking at that pipeline. And so, again, overall, I'd want to understand the opportunities. Do we have BANT? Have we gone through that? And BANT being, you know, do we understand the budget, the authority, the need, and the timing? And, you know, there are other things that you can add on, and we'll have some questions at the end that address that. But I think, you know, what are those opportunities? Where are they? Are they in the appropriate stage based on that criteria that we talked about? And I think the next two, what was the last thing we did? So what was the action for the salesperson? And what was the last action of the customer? And so those are the kinds of things that I'd want to be looking at overall from the pipeline to understand where things are. And then as you mentioned, Norman, you know, it's both the time in the current stage as well as the overall time that that opportunity has been alive, so to speak, or maybe dying if the case is in that direction. And, you know, one of the things, and we don't highlight it here, but what is the close date that was originally anticipated? And, you know, where is it now? And is that realistic? And I think we can start to look at the overall pipeline with those kind of things in mind and start to do a pretty thorough scrubbing at each stage and for each opportunity. And specifically, and one of the things I think has been really helpful for us is looking at those specific next steps. So what action are we taking? What are we expecting the customer to do? And if we can't articulate that for every deal in the pipeline, it probably doesn't deserve to be there at that point.
Absolutely. I think that's critical, that when you look at the pipeline and if the salesperson can't identify next steps, then you really have to question, does the opportunity belong there? And I also think that's a really great transition to how you can help improve win rate through coaching. And so one of the things that Ray and I write a lot of blogs on, and we've done a lot of work around also in our book, The High Impact Sales Manager, the largest component of that, the largest chapter in that book is dedicated to coaching, because ultimately sales coaching, which is working with each salesperson individually, either on opportunities or skills, is the highest ROI activity that a manager can take. So we are huge proponents of sales coaching, as are our clients. It's our number one sales management offering. And a lot of times and in prior webinars, we've focused on skills coaching, and we have a lot of information on skills coaching. But what we want to focus on today is really the opportunity coaching, because that's what really drives advancement within the sales pipeline. So if we think about, you know, skills coaching, that's helping the sales rep with knowledge and skills development, putting together coaching plans. Maybe a sales rep needs to improve on prospecting skills to add new opportunities. Or the other extreme, maybe they need to work on skills for gaining commitment, and that's part of their ongoing skills development. But the opportunity coaching is really about account problem solving, and most managers who came up from the sales ranks are really good at this. And they have to think about, you know, what's the account problem, you know, that we're solving? When is it done? It's really done in a pipeline review. And then this coaching discussion, you know, where you're, you know, in person, or if you have a remote sales team, you know, it might be something you do over the phone. So it works equally well with inside sales teams or remote sales teams to advance opportunities. And the purpose of opportunity coaching is really very key. Unlike skills development, which is more long-term, the goal here is short-term. You want to improve immediate win rates. There's opportunities in your pipeline, and it's your role as a manager to help your salespeople close that business. Also, in the midterm, it helps you with sales reps learning to develop the skills they need to close more business of their own, so that's why it's really called coaching. In addition to helping them figure out how to win right now, whatever they're learning, they can apply to future opportunities. But Ray, you know, you and I are believers in coaching, and we know that, you know, pretty much everyone that's, you know, joining us today is probably a believer in coaching, and yet managers face a lot of coaching challenges, and it doesn't always occur. So I'm going to use that as a transition to bring up yet one more chat pod and just, you know, really get some input from our participants on what are the challenges their managers face when they review opportunities with their reps.
Yeah, I think it'll be really interesting to hear, you know, what some of the challenges are. I think, you know, most managers, because they have been promoted from the sales ranks to manager, are pretty good at understanding what's going on with deals. And in fact, you know, as a salesperson, we never met a deal we didn't like. So, you know, frankly, they're probably better at jumping in and helping out, though I would say often they're not coaching as much as they're telling. So they want to share their expertise and say, hey, these are all the things you should do to close this deal, as opposed to really having a coaching conversation about how we can, you know, best move that forward. But, you know, I think we're hearing some of the responses coming in, you know, the idea of, you know, maybe the rep's not telling the truth. And I think, you know, Eddie, that's a great one that we ask the question about the opportunity, and we hear a lot of other things going on as opposed to, you know, maybe specifics or tangible examples. I think Tom says, you know, also there's too much bloat in the forecast, and each they want to make each opportunity sound better than it is. And I think that's really common is, you know, we don't want to admit that maybe half the things in our pipeline are overly optimistic or aren't fully qualified. And so we get a lot of kind of noise around that. I don't know, are there other things that that you've seen, Norman?
Yeah, I think, you know, this, you know, Eddie focuses on the truth. I would guess, you know, put a more positive spin on that and say maybe, you know, there's a lot of storytelling associated with the opportunities that are there. I also think, Ray, to your point, you know, managers, because they came up from sales, kind of often go into tell mode. Well, let me tell you what you need to do next. And they can accomplish the same goal by getting a little bit more buy-in from the salesperson, and not only, and make it a lot more sustainable in terms of ability to plan the future is, okay, given, you know, the options, what do you think we should do next? Let's think about, you know, three options we can look at to advance the opportunity. So when we think about, you know, the point you made earlier where there's no next step articulated, so the easy thing to do is to say, well, let's mark it as inactive or let's take it out. But the more creative role for the manager is, what could we do to create a next step? And that may involve getting the manager involved, maybe setting up an executive review, letting them know that your manager is going to join you for a call. You know, inaccurate forecasting is another reason that, you know, we see, you know, some challenges with opportunity coaching. Inconclusive information from on customers. So, you know, that point that Diane made just came up when I was working with a client. There isn't enough call planning, and we don't have enough information, and yet we're putting these things in the, as an opportunity without enough information. So, you know, I think really good input on some of the challenges.
Yeah, you know, I think it really requires that scrutiny and to kind of get to that next level. And I think we do, you know, often some of the best selling the reps do is when they're in the weekly sales meeting and they're trying to convince us that, you know, this is a great pipeline or a great opportunity. So, you know, I think we have some of those things that we've run into over time, and we've heard from our clients, and I think we, you know, captured a number of these in the chat pod. And, you know, specifically the storytelling, right, and whether that's out, you know, fabrication, or I refer to it more as a diversionary tactic, right? So it's one of those where there's a lot of storytelling around the opportunity and how great it could be and how great our relationship is. And it's, you know, kind of distracting from the real question, which is, okay, well then, have they agreed to the next step? And what action are you taking? And at what point are you going to be able to move this forward? Because I think that gets past the storytelling and it's a way to cut through. I think we also have this trade-off of, you know, often reps want to talk about the big fish, you know, that big outlier, that huge opportunity that's out there. And I think we should be dealing with those, and maybe even as a separate, you know, strategy session or deal review. But we don't want to lose sight of the rest of those opportunities that are the ones that are realistically going to make or break the forecast for that quarter. So what are we doing to move each one of those forward? And then, sure, let's take that big fish and you know, focus on that separately. But that's more binary, and you know, if we lose that, then the quarter may be lost, or if we win it, that's great. But you know, let's not let that distract from the rest of the opportunities in the pipeline. You know, the third point, we've said a salesperson never met a deal they didn't like, so it's really hard to let those go or to say, you know what, maybe my relationship isn't as good as I thought, or maybe they're not going to move forward. So I think they want to cling to those. And then, you know, oftentimes we hear they can't really articulate the next step. And for me, that's a big symptom that they really don't know what's going on. If they can't accurately articulate what they're going to do and what they expect the customer to do, then, you know, they're more relying on hope. And as it's been said, you know, that's not really a strategy for managing your pipeline.
You know, Ray, I would just say that, you know, of these, the last two are what we see a lot with bloated pipelines. So they're clinging to stalled opportunities. They really don't want to move those out of the pipeline. That's why I suggest the idea of the inactive pipeline as a way to hold on to the idea and not lose sight of it, but it only moves to the next stage when they can articulate a next step. The other thing I think that moving those out of the pipeline does is it puts more emphasis on new opportunity development. I guess That's one of the biggest priorities we're seeing from clients today is we're too reliant on the companies we've always done business with, and we're not generating enough new opportunities. So I think by moving those to an inactive pipeline, it puts more pressure on new business development. And you mentioned we were going to come back to some of the key coaching questions. Again, we're not going to provide a whole training on this, but maybe you could just walk us through some of the questions that you know our participants should think about as they're providing opportunity coaching.
Sure. You know, and I think these are helpful to kind of have in the manager's back pocket. And again, you know, instead of just saying, well, do this or do that, I think asking some great questions around, you know, the business need and budget to start with. You know, have we really qualified that? Is it a good solution for us? I mean, do we know what criteria they're using to make their selection? And can we make money? You know, so is this a good opportunity for us even to be chasing? Is it in our sweet spot? Is it, you know, compared to the other opportunities, a great fit for us? Can we make money? You know, is it a good sized opportunity? And is this a client we want to be doing business with? You know, so I think we start to ask those questions to really decide, should we be chasing and focusing on this opportunity, or are there other things that might be more important or more appropriate? And then some of those other BANT questions, you know, the timing, when are they going to make the decision? When do they want to put the solution in place? You know, is there some urgency? Because without urgency, you know, I don't think they're going to, you know, probably move forward. So what is that sense of urgency? Can we help build that around, hey, if you've identified a pain, then we can help you solve it. Wouldn't you want to start taking advantage of that as soon as possible? So, you know, asking questions around timing, around the decision makers, which we've talked about, you know, what are those criteria, who owns them, and when can we present to them? And then ultimately around the relationships, you know, do we have those access to the decision makers and to the coaches and to the sponsors? And again, I think these are ones that we should have in our back pocket to be asking those questions about the opportunities and really requiring the salespeople to go back and think about, have we done all the things at each stage that we should have done to ensure success, and have we gotten those actions or responses back from the customer that we're expecting?
You know, Ray, I know I want to come back to solution fit for a minute, because I think this gets to the point of clinging to stalled opportunities. And when there are not enough new opportunities, we often find that salespeople are spending and organizations are spending a lot of time on opportunities that don't have a good solution fit. And so they're kind of basically trying to put a square peg in a round hole to solve a customer opportunity. And the problem with that is it's not likely to result in a win if you're, you know, in a lot of cases, if your solution doesn't address 70 to 80% of the customer's problem, you have to really assess the probability and say, have we worked on other opportunities where there wasn't a great fit and we've still won? And I think you have to ask the customer a lot more questions to make sure the solution is aligned. And that may be one of the biggest pitfalls that we see, is because there aren't enough opportunities, we're not necessarily working on the right opportunities from a solution fit standpoint. I know we're kind of moving up against our overall time allotment for this webinar, so just want to talk about a few key takeaways and then turn it back to Jackie. Key takeaways: define a healthy pipeline to create accurate forecasts, and that gets to acknowledging the stages of the pipeline, making sure that they're customer-driven criteria with each stage so that you can eliminate stuck opportunities or at least move them to inactive, making sure that there's really velocity that's representative of other opportunities that you've worked on in your overall sales cycle, ongoing pipeline reviews so you can really produce more accurate forecasts. And then, Ray, what you just talked about is the opportunity coaching and asking the questions you really need to ask to make sure that this can move forward. And so with that, Jackie, I want to turn it back to you. I hope everyone's enjoyed our session today. And, Jackie, I'll turn it back to you.
Great. Thank you, Norman and Ray. We've received a number of questions on this topic, so I'm going to go ahead. First question, how do you consider a close date?
So I'll take a shot at that. I think Ray spoke about that some, but I think that the close dates are really important, and quite often the close dates that we see in pipelines are really not realistic. If, for example, someone has something listed as closing by December 31, And then when you drill down, you find out that the customer doesn't have budget and the budget's not going to be available till January. That may be unrealistic. And I think that salespeople are very optimistic. But if the deal is, let's say, up in needs identification and you know that your average sales cycle is 120 days, unless there is a trigger on the client side that really says this is why we have to do it very quickly, it may not close by the estimated close date. So I think when in the one-on-one reviews with the salespeople, it's really important to say, where does this deal fit in the stage? What is a realistic close date? The problem with optimistic close dates or what maybe say optimistic dates that are close dates that are too optimistic is it will lead to a higher forecast than is really reasonable.
Wonderful. Thank you. Next question. When sales reps get into storytelling, how do you get them back on track?
Well, Norman, I'll take a shot at that one. And I think we, you know, alluded to that a bit, that we may get the, kind of elaborate story about what's going on with the opportunity. I think what's nice about some of the concepts we covered here today is if we go back to those fundamentals and say, you know, that's great, and I love the fact that you have this relationship and that you understand everything that's going on in the client. Tell me, what's the next action you expect the customer to take and by what date? And I think just by asking those two questions, we can cut through a lot of that story and really boil it back to, well, do we know? Do we have a plan in place? And now I can help as a manager to coach that individual on those things that maybe we can do to get to that next action and that next step. So I think we can actually cut through a lot of that storytelling because we don't want to spend all of our sales meeting, kind of hearing about the noise in the background around those opportunities.
And Ray, I'll just expand on that. I would probably allow up to 1 or 2 minutes of storytelling because as a manager, I may pick up on some clues. But as soon as it starts to go beyond that, I would say, hey, you know, let's really take that offline and really just focus for right now on the next action. Because to Ray's point, you don't really want that to dominate a sales meeting. But I would at least listen intently for the first 1 or 2 minutes. Based on your experience as a manager, you may pick up on some clues that can help identify the next action.
Thank you. So based on time, I'm going to go ahead with the last question. What management actions should you take if a rep consistently has an inflated pipeline?
I'll take a shot at that, Ray. It's Norman. I think if they consistently have an inflated pipeline, use some of the data to show that and just, you know, run a forecast on what their pipeline has been individually and say, you know, this is really creating a problem for your credibility and also for my credibility as a manager. So I love the optimism. I love the enthusiasm. But we really have to look at, you know, the reality associated. Are all of these active opportunities? And what do you think we should do differently? So I do think that's a great coaching opportunity to say, you know, we love the enthusiasm. We like more opportunities as opposed to less. What we really want to focus on is quality opportunities and just doing a little bit more detailed one-on-one review to rationalize that pipeline based on historical performance.
Absolutely. And Norman, I'll just add one other kind of fun, I think, example or opportunity that you can take with that, which is, you know, having the sales reps at the beginning of the month commit to what they're going to close that month. And, you know, again, a lot of things change and there are a lot of variables, but getting them thinking about, okay, what am I actually on November 1st going to commit to closing in November? And then at the end of the month, look back at that and see how accurate we are. And we can do it for the quarter as well. But I've worked in sales organizations that even have contests around that, you know, kind of a closest to the pin. And I would argue even closest without going over because, you know, again, having that $500,000 that you're not giving visibility to is almost as damaging as, you know, having a bloated pipeline that doesn't close just because we don't have the visibility. So, yeah, I think having the reps commit to what are they going to close this month and this quarter and then see how close they can get can be a real great way of kind of cutting through some of that noise and encouraging them to think differently about what they're actually going to close.
Thank you for listening. If you found this episode valuable, please leave us a positive review on iTunes and share this track with your network. If you're looking to improve sales management skills, you may also be interested in getting a complimentary copy of our High Impact Sales Coaching Guide, which you can download at bit.ly/SRP coaching. Again, that's bit.ly/SRP coaching. Thanks again for listening, and remember, better skills produce better results.